Hello, and welcome to the 20th annual Read Comics podcast. This is Marty,
Florence,
and Jason.
And tonight we have a special treat, our first ever interview. So we're going to be calling
Tom Zoller.
Tom Zoller.
The writer and artist of Love and Capes. So we're going to call him pretty quick here, and as soon as he's on, we will be back.
All right.
So, Tom, welcome to the first interview episode of Read Comics.
Hi.
And we're very excited to talk to you tonight about your comic, Love and Capes, and just about you and your career in general.
Great.
Is there anything you'd like to say off the bat to sort of introduce us, introduce
you to
yourself?
Yourself to our listeners?
did and do a lot of lettering. I used to letter for Marvel Comics on their Epic line. I lettered Dead Beats. I lettered all of the Lone Star books. I did a graphic novel series called Raider back in 2001. And then I started doing Love and Capes in 2005. And that has been going gangbusters. I'm just perennially surprised at how well that book has been received.
Great.
Cool.
Well, after this episode, you can be sure that at least 10 more people will know who you are.
I am fine growing by 10. I'm going to go to my head too quickly.
I'd be surprised if it's 10, frankly.
Well, we found out about your comic through Free Comic Book Day.
Oh, excellent.
Yep. It was one of the ones that, out of all the ones that we got on Free Comic Book Day, I think it's one of the ones that we actually read.
was it this year's Free Comic Book Day or last year's?
It was last year's.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good. That's why I do it.
Yeah, it was totally fun. Well, I think one of the things I loved about it right off the bat is how, what a personal story it feels like in the superhero genre.
Okay.
And I didn't really have a question, but if you have something to say, say it.
Oh, and, when I went to the Kubert School and I had a couple characters that I always intended to work on, and one of them was a superhero. And I found that I liked writing the stuff when he wasn't a superhero as much as I liked writing the stuff where he was.
Mm-hmm.
So I noticed that a lot of that bled over and became some of the basis for Love and Kids.
Yeah, and I think that really shows, because we feel, I think, especially in Love and Capes, like, the story that's not the superhero part is far more interesting, or is the interesting part. That's the meat and potatoes of it, and it's great.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, not that there is a lot of this. I just noticed in issue 7 where there was a couple of, I think issues in 6 and 7, were some of the first times where you actually show them capturing the bad guys. Actually, I think it was in issue 6.
Issue 3, you actually see them catch one bad guy, but it's not. And come to think of it, I think 5, they're possible to be lost at the police station.
Yep, that's right. Issue 6 is one of the action shots, the action panels where Darkblade and the Crusader actually bust in. It's kind of like
the shattering glass,
and that's one of the only times that you really see them so much in action. So it's clearly more about the relationship, which is great. It's what really stands you apart. Well, as you say, it's a sitcom,
Yeah.
Yes.
He was only on for like 14 years or something. Ross, in the show, Ross was a paleontologist, but you never actually saw him paleontologize. So it's kind of the same thing where the characters have jobs, but you see them more away from their job than doing their job.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that you just made up paleontologize, what would being a superhero be? Would that be like superhero-wise? Super-size?
I think
it's
the word.
Wait, say it again?
Crime fightification.
Crime fightification.
Nice, nice.
So we were hoping that you would sing for us.
Yeah. Why would you ask that?
No, we were listening. We were reading your blog and reading about the people who got
the Dr. Horrible song stuck in their head thanks to you.
Paul Story and everyone back and forth doing that. Did you read about the way I won up them at the end of the show?
Yeah, it was. Go ahead.
We were going back and forth, and we would, just sing a line or two of, everyone's a hero in their own way, and then it gets stuck in your head the rest of the day. So, Paul actually called me and sang me the Bad Horse song on my cell phone. So, I got a couple friends of mine from the show, and they were the typical, booth and drape setup, and I had them go behind his booth so that when I did the, I don't remember what the name of the song is, but it's got the line that says, I hear it's better the second time, I hear you get to do the weird stuff. They pop their heads through the curtain and sang the...
I do the weird stuff.
Yeah. What's great is that Paul decided to sing the chorus part himself, so he made himself the third kind of creepy guy.
Nice.
I also like that Daryl Banks was the artist on the other side of the table, and I had to go to him and say, Daryl Lane, Tom Zoller, I do work with MidOhioCon, and I said, screw it, I'm just trying to tell you a joke about Paul's story. He said, oh, come right in.
Nice. Yeah, so the other funny thing is that I totally randomly was singing You Never Count Your Money to Florence in the car for some reason. This is before we read issue 8, but literally hours before.
With your gambler opening for which Marty did not recognize.
Right, Jason had to help spell out the rest of the illusion, because we recognized the last words, but didn't realize that it was all incorporated.
Your entire about the author.
It's hysterical.
There's been lots of singing related to you lately.
Well, excellent. Every time I think of the gambler, I still think of when he was on the Muppets. I think that's the first time I heard the song. Rogers was on the Muppets. And I thought the gambler, Hebrew Keevan, was actually the name of the gambler.
That's funny.
Well, we came up with a few questions for you.
Okay.
So, why don't we start out with a little bit kind of background stuff? The sitcom aspect is very evident. So, I'm thinking that you probably grew up watching a lot of sitcoms. A lot of maybe Saturday morning television and reading a lot of comics. Again, the parallels to Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman are huge, and you talk about Civil War this and Crisis that, so you apparently keep yourself abreast of what's going on with comics. So when you were growing up, who were your inspirations? What sitcoms did you love? What comics did you read? Who did you admire?
Oh, man. I was a huge fan of Justice League and Firestorm. So I kind of gravitated towards Jerry Conway and Roy Thomas in the 1980s.
Oh, yeah.
Firestorm was the first new character I remember from when I was reading. So it was the first time that, I got to get issue one and start with a character as opposed to, reading Justice League and seeing the little asterisk that revealed in Justice League 77, where the Joker revealed his prime god, where the Justice League secret sanctuary is. So it was the first one I could start cold on. And I think a lot of I still think Justice League 200, while not being the greatest comic ever written, is the most quintessential comic book ever written.
Sure.
I don't know if you guys have read that, where the original seven members in the Justice League wind up fighting the new members, and they have the big jam issue where they've got Joe Kubert and Dick Giordano and Brian Bolan and all sorts of artists working on it. It's just everything I always wanted a comic to be. So
great.
That's
yeah.
That's pretty well my benchmark.
Wonderful. Yeah, I think that my the new Teen Titans were really that kind of thing for me.
I came out of those late, but by the time I came out of Terra, it just died.
Oh, yeah. That was kind of, you know, it was kind of a turning point, really.
Mm-hmm. The first book I started collecting regularly was DC Comics Presents, which was the Superman team-up book.
Yep.
I don't know why I went to that one, but that always had probably because it was Superman, you could get away with doing some really bizarre team-ups. I mean, anytime they did, like, Batman Scalp Hunter, you know, and Brave and the Bold, that took a bit of a stretch to do, but you could do Superman Sergeant Rock's time travel story, and it made a lot more sense.
So you really are much more of a DC guy than a Marvel guy.
Yeah. Part of it was being a kid in the 70s and 80s, and back when they used to distribute comics on newsstands.
Mm-hmm.
The DC comics tended not to be continued. And when you're buying comics on the whim of your parents, it's a lot easier to follow a story when they're done in one.
Oh, sure.
Or two or three. So, you know, the Marvel stuff just, you know, I found it later in life. I started reading X-Men and then got on board with Marvel right about the time of Secret Wars. But, you know, there was always need to be continued, and it just wasn't as satisfying to read as a complete, you know, Superman story.
Sure.
I totally agree.
Marty hates cliffhangers, so he has some issues with your issue 8.
That's true. The extended issues that are all done in one, and then I finally get to issue 8.
But by now we're hooked, and it's on our pull list, so we know we'll get the next part of the story.
So that segues nicely into a question I had. Do you tend to write the story for... I mean, it seems like they're still in half-page webcomic chunks, even though, correct me if I'm wrong, they're not actually on the site anymore. Is that correct?
The site does 2 new strips a week, but they're from the comics. So right now, like, part of issue 3, I think, is up on the website. The reason I'm stuck with the 4-panel format, because this book was always done for print, was just designed so that I could repurpose it for the website. I worked with Bill Williams on a book called Side Chips, and he was the one who had the epiphany that whacked me upside the head to say, screens are landscapes, as comic books mean portrait, cut your page in half, and it fits much nicer, it's easier to read. So I did that because I didn't know if Love in Case 1 would do well, so I wanted to be able to put it on the web if I needed to. And what it helped do was get a bit of a meter to make sure that I had regular jokes in the book.
Yeah.
I wrote a spec sitcom there was a contest on Bravo that was called Situation Comedy. It was kind of like Project Greenlight for sitcoms.
Yep, I saw a little bit of it.
Excuse me?
I saw a little bit of that.
Yeah, I did a book called, I did a pilot called Long Distance, and while I think it was really good, it was probably more Sports Night than it was Friends. So the 4-panel format reminds me, have a joke, you know, to make sure that you're bringing the funny as well as everything else. Not that every 4-panel is necessarily a joke, but there's always a beat to it.
Well, one of the things that we've really noticed is how dense one issue is compared to the standard comic out there. And I think that there's clearly a lot of discipline in keeping the story moving and keeping things going, like you say, even half page to half page.
Some of that is because it comes out quarterly, and it's a more rewarding experience. Some of it is railing against decompressed storytelling, for the most part. I think it works great on some books some of the time, but just, you know, especially if there's only one book coming out every 90 days, you need to, you know, have a satisfied feeling after you're done with it. So
definitely, this is not one that takes you just 5 minutes to read. This is, you know, I'm finding that I read a little bit to make it last. I read a little bit and then put it away and then read a little bit more.
Excellent.
Yeah, almost. Well, it's like a webcomic, like you said, you know.
And I've rediscovered caption boxes. I know a lot of people have stopped using them, but just, you know, having a caption box that says the next day as opposed to, you know, actually showing the day unfold, it lets you go at a much snappier pace.
Yeah. Speaking of the caption boxes, but not really. More the word balloons. Florence has a question about some of your design.
Yeah, so the fact that they're semi-transparent, I think, really is striking and somewhat different from what we're used to seeing. How did you come to that choice?
Oh, that was an accident. when I did the very first sample, I did a demo of, I think, page 12 of issue 1. The characters looked completely different because we printed in the end of 6. But I didn't leave enough room for the characters' taunt, which is horrible because being a letterer, that's been my complaint for the last 10 years of working. So I didn't leave enough room for the characters' taunt, so I tried doing the transparent word balloons so I could see a little bit more of the art through it. I made them a little more opaque after the first issue, just to make them a little easier to read, but I don't know, they become as much a design element as anything else, and Kyle Baker, who I'm a huge fan of, you know, points out that maybe use computer lettering in comics, but try to make it look like hand lettering, whereas books don't try to make computer lettering look like, you know, it's typed by hand or done by monks or anything. So, just like the idea that it's taking advantage of the technology and bringing a look to it that it wouldn't, you know, another book wouldn't necessarily have.
Yeah, I think it's very effective in that. Now, do you draw in computer software as well, or do you scan in?
I draw by hand for the most part. Work in pencil, and then I ink mostly in brush and a flexible pen, micron pens. Some of the backgrounds are either drawn once by hand and then reused, or some of the backgrounds are drawn on computer. A lot of buildings are computer. It's kind of that animation cell background format, and it was originally designed as a time-saving design, so that, you know, once I draw the bookstore, I don't have to keep drawing in the bookstore. The bookstore has changed since the first issue.
Wow, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, the book on the shelf changed a lot, but the bookstore itself, I think I redesigned the exterior finally, but it's one of those trial and error things where you design a set, essentially, and then you realize, oh, if I had designed it this way, like, now there's weather on the outside of the building.
Oh.
So I've got it set up so that it can be winter or summer or fall, and I can rotate it out. And especially when you're in the middle of the book, sometimes it's nice to, you know, be able to reach into the stock art and say, oh, I just need an exterior of the building. I'll put that there.
Well, I think you do a good job of keeping it varied, even though, you know, they may be reused or, you know, stock backgrounds.
I didn't even notice that they were stock backgrounds. I have noticed a lot of scan images for the books and various, like right now, as we're talking, I'm looking at the comic book convention and seeing the scanned images in the background, and you mentioned Raider, and I see that Raider is here, and I can't tell
if
you're
with all the trouble of generating that artwork, then might as well reuse it.
There you go.
And I think Sidechicks is here, and I'm not sure if I put a couple. I hit a couple friends up for artwork. You know, I'll throw your book in the back of my book if you want. I just need something to fill out the background. That makes it a little more real.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of times in the bookstore, I'll either throw out books I'm reading or have on my mind, or I co-wrote a Star Trek short story that went to the collection last year. So when that happened, that book wound up being the featured book in the bookstore for some reason.
Wow, we'll have to keep looking for these details.
Was that actually published?
Yes, it came out from Pocket in September, October last year. Oddly enough, it was Commander Riker's story that it happens right before his wedding. He gets killed, and then it's what he does to try to get back. It's comedy, like your heart is actually beamed out of your chest, but it's a romantic story at least.
My mom would love it. Riker's her favorite character.
Okay, yeah, I actually ripped his heart right out. So.
What's it called?
It's called Till Death.
Till Death. Mm-hmm. Have you written any other, like, you know, fiction?
Not published, aside from the comic book work that I've done. I pitched a couple of stories, but nothing deep sits stuff yet. The Star Trek story was with my friend Bob Ingersoll, who has written a few novels, and he pitched a couple short story ideas together, and that was one of the ones that went. So that was just a blast to be able to get the right Captain Picard. So.
Nice.
I had to watch it, though, because I was writing 11 Caves at the same time, and every once in a while I noticed that Riker was getting just a little too funny.
Rechannel the funny into the different outlet.
Yeah. It's like, you know, he should have been funnier on the show, but he shouldn't banter quite that much, so let's knock it down a peg.
So, do you want to say something about, I don't even know how to pronounce your publisher.
Merkel.
Oh.
Who's a huge fan. It's her scary name. It's my mom's maiden name. She's a huge fan of my work, and she was one of the people who... I was one of those irritatingly smart kids in school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kind that would just kind of show up and face the test I didn't know about. This big hard bill when I told my mom I was going to art school, and she said, but you're a National Merit Scholar. What are you going to art school for? And I tried to explain to her that I'd been telling her this for 18 years, and I thought she would have picked up on the hint. But, Grandma Merkel was one of the people who, you know, told my mom, look, he'll be fine. You know, and was very supportive of it. Now my mom is also hugely supportive. So
that's nice.
You know, just saying that you're going to be a comic book artist is, you know, like telling your parents you're going to be an actor or a rock star, except the people aren't as pretty.
So are there any other, I assume then it's solely your, you know, property. Are there any other books coming out on that press, or?
Not right now, no. I published the first three Raiders through that. I did that sitcom script I had just lying around, so I put that out as a script book. So you can get long distance on Amazon and off the website. And I worked with a radio station up here in Cleveland, and we published a joke book through it. But aside from that, that's pretty much just a... It's just 11 Caves right now, but the other reason I called it Merkel Press was I didn't want it to be Tom Zoller Art Studios because I didn't want it to have my name on it if I decided to publish somebody else's work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's kind of odd as, you know, Sean Tiffany's X6 by Tom Zoller Art Studios, which just, you know, had a little too much of me on it. So, to build in room for expansion.
It's less limiting.
Yes, exactly.
So do you have a day job?
Hours that I'm working. I do comic book art, I do lettering, I do a lot of magazine illustration, graphic design, website design. But I'd say about 70% of my income is coming directly from cartooning. So.
Oh, great.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. I've been completely off on my own for 7 years. Which when I graduated at Kubert School, we had a thing where we could, special project out of classes and say, I don't need this class, I'm going to be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost stopped caricature. I said, now I'm going to draw an Ant-Man, I don't need a new caricature. So the first job I got was doing caricatures at an amusement park.
Of course.
I tried to go freelance directly after that, and that didn't quite take because I had built up a name. So I worked as an art director for an ad agency for a while. I worked at a newspaper before that, and then it got to the point where I was only sleeping 3 or 4 hours a night because I had so much other stuff going, and I said, you know, it's probably time to go.
Well,
when I'm on my own, and it's been frighteningly easy. I don't think it's supposed to be this easy.
you're the American dream.
Yeah. Honestly, it doesn't even seem like I used to work for the man. It's like in a completely different life.
What did you do while you were breaking in?
The newspaper, I started off doing mechanicals, you know, pasting stuff up.
Oh, sure.
Before they went completely computer. I designed car layouts and advertising layouts as specs to get people to advertise. That was my job there for 2 years. When you're working production, you work like 4 in the morning to noon, which are just great hours. Like,
wow.
So when I finally became the regular artist, it was 8 to 5, Monday through Friday. And then I became an art director at an ad agency outside of Cleveland. And there I did websites, I directed commercials. Actually, did a teen pregnancy comic book.
Oh, wow.
The first comic book I they have to quit the bold stand being against it.
Oh, I was on the fence there.
Yeah. and as a writer, I mean, it was a really interesting project because you had to write teen pregnancy as being bad without saying that teens who are pregnant are bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote it, the director of the Family Planning Agency and I were talking about it. He really liked this Spider-Man Power Pack team up that they did about child abuse.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
So we wanted to do something like that. So could we do that? And I said, well, not Spider-Man, because that would punch a lot of Mike. I said, I can do something like that. So I wrote a time-traveling superhero so that you could show the future, and then that way it sets up a dream sequence.
Huh.
And they decided to change it, and they said, well, they just have a couple changes. We're not sure that the superhero aspect works great in the comic book. And I said, okay. But I said, that's not a huge change. I mean, I can actually change everything in dream sequences, and they had a couple more changes, and they said, hey, we need you to cut out the carjacking scene. And I said, well, if he's not a superhero, I don't need to show him stopping a crime. So, yeah, that one's gone. Don't worry about it. But, yeah, I got to direct some TV commercials, but it's an animation. And it was a great lesson for doing stuff like Love and Case completely by myself, because I could do all the production work on my own, and, that's how I learned Photoshop, and that's how I learned InDesign and Quark and Illustrator, all of which I use regularly to do the comic.
Are you still using Quark then?
I switched to InDesign.
Yeah.
I switched over from that. Actually, when I started working with Marvel and Crimson Dynamo, I think they used InDesign, and it was just the ability to drop a. I'm going to get. Really technically, to drop a completely layered Photoshop document in the middle of a page layout program, that was just fantastic. There wasn't anything like it at the time.
Yeah, I have to admit, I've never used InDesign. I did a little bit of Quark when I worked at a newspaper in college. Let's get back to Love and Capes.
Okay.
Are they going to have kids?
Can they have kids? Is he an alien?
Yeah, that's a good question. Is he an alien? When do we get an origin story?
I don't know if you'll ever get an origin story. The origin story I originally had planned was that he got his powers from a meteor, and then that My Super Ex-Girlfriend movie came out.
Oh.
About the same time the second issue of Love and Case was hitting, and I said, you know what, I can't do it.
Oh, that's good, because that movie was horrible.
I gotta say, it was the right kind of horrible, because I haven't seen it, just to prevent any sort of idea of it. But it was horrible enough that nobody remembers it, but not horrible enough so that it tainted the genre forever.
True.
So hopefully Hollywood will come see Love and Case and say, oh, this is an idea we can do, and not go, ooh, the taint of the Uma Thurman, the Wilson film.
I didn't think it was that bad. Oh. I'm surprised you haven't seen it, just to, it's like viewing your competition.
Yeah, when it first came out, it was just, I didn't want to accidentally take any ideas from it when I was so trying not to be that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I probably could watch it now and be okay, but I don't know, there's just so much stuff on TV these days.
Well, I suppose a closer comparison would be the British series My Hero.
Yeah, and I have seen a couple episodes of that, so.
What did you think of that?
I think it made the mistake that a lot of superhero stuff does, where it treated the superhero aspect completely silly.
Mm-hmm.
And Love and Case, for as much of a humor book as it is, it's not a parody.
Mm-hmm.
When there's an asteroid heading for the planet, there's actually an asteroid heading for the planet, and everybody could die. It's just that the superheroes have kind of all done this before, so they don't appear worried. It's a little more like The Adventures of Superman, where you've got that, very avuncular, don't worry about it, I'll take care of this plane.
Yep.
I brought to it, so. I've thrown in one or two joke villains before, but in the second issue there was a point where I almost went completely over the line, made things too silly. Unfortunately, I raged back before that happened. I think I was watching too much Venture Brothers at the time.
Well, you do have a
Venture Brothers, but I don't want to do that. So not on this book of it.
You do have a very cartoon quality in it. On your blog, you talked about how, hey, it would be great if anyone out there owned a television studio and wanted to make a live-action sitcom of Love and Capes, which would be great. But what would you think about an animated version?
Well, to cool crap to see the clown. If they dump a truck of money up next to my door, I'm probably going to take it. The goofy thing is that I think the humor and the superhero aspect of the book would come out just great in animation, but I think the honest quality of the relationship would suffer.
Sure.
That's just a prejudice on my part, but aside from Disney films, you don't see a lot of animated films doing honest God romance stories.
They're
capable of it, but...
Right, and this is a grown-up love story, so a lot of TV networks don't know how to market animated shows to anything other than kids, so I imagine they would drop, you know, anything
right.
that resonates with us is, in terms of,
mm-hmm.
you know, dating.
So, I can't say who, but I actually have, last summer, I had conversations with one network about turning into a live-action sitcom.
Oh, wow.
The writer's strike also then came along, so that has gone nowhere, but... Hopefully, that somebody else will pick up the ball and run a little bit. But it's, you know, that moment, your first step into a much larger world, as Obi-Wan Kenobi said, where you just realize you're being asked a big dance and that hopefully this stuff is going to keep happening.
Do you have a dream cast?
You know, I very much based Amazonia on Angelina Jolie when I was designing the character. And I think J. August Richards from Angel would make a great Garth play.
Oh, yeah.
Other than that, I don't know if he is. I don't mean to get ages. I don't know if he's becoming too old. But he played Brad on Boston Legal. He's on Fringe now. Square jawed Captain America type. And I think he would probably be really good. Mark Valley. I actually think too that and it partially fits with a friend of mine, Mark Luke, who played the gruesome bug on Angel.
Yeah, so we heard about that. So I'm a big Buffy Angel fan, so I was all excited to hear that.
Yeah, I could see him as Mark. That's part of the reason I named the character Mark actually when I was starting. But Abby and Charlotte are the characters I've never really figured out who to cast.
Well, maybe it'll be an opportunity for some unknown woman to get a leading role.
That would be fantastic.
Have you seen any of the No Heroics yet?
No, I haven't. I've heard about it. I've also heard that it's very much like Hero Happy Hour. But
what is Hero Happy Hour?
No, I think he's just...
Chris is my editor at IDW, he's doing the trade, and a lot of things bleed together after a while. but it was originally called Superhero Happy Hour, and then they got sued by DC and Marvel for using the word superhero.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is why Love and Cases billed as a heroically super situation comedy.
Nice.
It was about superheroes hanging at the bar after being superheroes.
Interesting. So was that a comic?
Yeah. I know IDW put out at least one trade of it.
Cool. I've never even heard of that. I'm going to have to track it down. The other comic that I think Love and Case really is reminiscent of, for me anyway, and maybe
X-Men?
It's... Yeah. What was that?
Sorry. Is it X-Men? No.
is PS238. Have you read that much?
I have read that. I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, that's one of my new favorites.
And
a friend of mine in Texas got me hooked on that. And I think the creator's from Texas, isn't he? He usually got them there selling them, because I think that's when I started picking them up.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, I thought he was from here for some reason. I think from his blog, but I don't know.
Yeah, I could be completely wrong. I think it may just be that Scott Purvis connection.
And it actually says in the back of the trades that he's from Kansas, or he lives in Kansas. But
he's just throwing us all off.
Yeah, I think it's all a lie. I think he's got some secret underground base. And but yeah, I feel like what it really shares is the, you know, being about this, you know, the characters and the relationships between characters, and how they sort of react to the superhero issues.
Yeah, and it does a really good job of not being too silly, you know, especially for a book about a kid in school. There's a lot of heart to it. So that's but high praise to compare him to.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, I mean, you'd said you've done a mix of work for hire, doing lettering, and now you're doing your own creator-owned work. Is there a piece of that that was your goal the whole time, or is it just, you know, everything creatively sort of feeds into your career as you go along?
Was it my intention to have this as my career path?
Well, yeah, specifically the writing and creating and drawing your own book, was that your goal?
Yes, that was always my goal. It has come about differently than I thought. When I was in art school, I could letter better than anyone else. It was the one thing I had, because when you go up to art school, you're generally the best artist in your high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to art school and you get your butt kicked on a regular basis. I went to school with Scott Collins. So there's only so good you're going to feel about drawing when you're sitting next to him. But I could letter better than anyone else.
Mm.
So aside from lettering my friends' assignments for free pieces, I also use that as my intro into the business, because I got in just before computer lettering started taking over.
Huh.
And I figured it was much easier to get people to look at my art samples if I sent them in with the pages that they needed to letter. So I figured I'd work up from a letterer to an eager to a penciler and hopefully start writing. And then I just, the market was not before I decided that I wanted to try it on my own, that I wasn't going to be able to do the book the way I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
So I did Raider, which was the character I created when I was 12, and fortunately fixed a lot of things on the way, because there's no point in me joining the X-Men. But that was a huge learning experience, and the one that, from there I went on to do Love and Capes. And the odd thing is that now I'm getting offers to do other work based on having done Love and Capes. So it seems like I'm winding up where I meant to go. I'm just not taking the path I thought I would to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, can you talk a little bit about your character design and costume design and how you came up with the look of the comic?
A lot of it was actually working in the negative. For having a character who looked like Superman, or who essentially was Superman, I didn't want to look too much like it, so I picked red for his costume instead of blue.
Okay.
And started working around from that. Originally, he was blonde, and somebody told me that he looked kind of like Mr. Incredible.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, we can't have that, so I gave him brown hair, which now everybody thinks I'm drawing myself. And I wish I looked like that. And actually, based on that, that's where everything else came about. Abby was a blonde because I needed contrast with Mark, who's a brunette. And the costumes are very much based on, typical Silver Age kind of briefs and cape costumes. As much as I love the Incredibles, and I do, I think capes are cool. I don't care what they think. So, they're cool to draw. They look good when they're blowing around in a great breeze, and they're such a great design element that a lot of my lead characters have capes. Obviously, Amazonia doesn't. She doesn't have much of anything at all, actually.
Yeah. She's doing just fine.
Yes. And I wanted working down to his, I didn't want them to be overly complicated costumes either. So I think a lot of the inspiration there are two inspirations on the Crusader costume. One is Jack Kirby's Thor, because the cape definitely flares out the way Jack Kirby capes, especially on Thor wood, where they kind of jut out over the shoulders and back.
Sure.
And the other is a little bit of Captain Marvel. I had a teacher at Cambridge who said that he always thought that Captain Marvel threw a better punch than Superman, because he had all those rings on his forearm, so that when the artist was drawing him, he really got the sense of foreshortening that came with it, because he followed the contours of the rings.
Oh.
So that's part of why Mark has those big bands on his outfit.
Interesting.
And everything else is, the books are a little more designy. I just put the trade paperback, finally got that done, and off to IDW, which collects the first 6 issues. And I was surprised at how much I hate my art from 2 years ago. But the characters were originally a lot more straight-angled and very graphic, as opposed to, it became a little more natural. I really started finding my rhythm around the second or third issue, where suddenly they were moving in 3 dimensions quite nicely.
Yeah, I noticed in this seventh issue, or this eighth issue right now, that the characters do seem to be a lot more dynamic, that there seem to be a lot more planes,
mm-hmm.
and that not that the characters were like stock before, but they just seem to be in so many more positions now than they used to be.
And some of that has actually come about from the writing. I very much based it, as said billions of times before, on that sitcom idea that the Supergirl would take place on camera. And I was, the first couple issues, I was very limited by that and was doing essentially what you could do on a TV budget. And then somebody pointed out to me that I was doing a comic book. And there were certain things I could get away with that, you know, there are scenes where the characters are flying and talking that don't really violate the premise of the book, but would probably be too expensive to do as, you know, on the television show.
Mm-hmm.
So I started loosening up with what I would let the characters do. So you get things like where they do bust into the warehouse in issue 7.
Sure.
And, they're doing a lot more stuff while they're talking. They're certainly talking a lot, but they're doing more while it happens.
Yeah, and it is the dialogue that really makes it, I think. You know,
I worked so hard on that. You asked about sitcoms that were influences on me. I'm clearly a child of the 80s, and I don't know why Growing Pains has stuck with me so, but, you know, Carol and Mike used to go off at each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a huge Aaron Sorkin fan. Wrestling, Sports Night, American President. In my mind, I'm still writing that.
Well, definitely. I think Sports Night is a more compelling model than Friends, really.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it didn't last as long.
If I watch it too much, I find that I pick up the cadence, and mm-hmm. I get really irritating to talk to, because I start speaking in monologues.
And always walking briskly?
Yes. And I don't have that big a house, so there's not a lot of room to walk. You know, I'm also a councilman here in the village that I live in, and I was very disappointed that we didn't have a lot of hallways in the village hall that I could walk around while making important political decisions.
What kind of important political decisions have you been making? I read that you were recently mayor because your superiors
exactly.
were out of town.
As we're doing this interview, I'm still mayor for another 4 hours or so. We were getting the roads repaired. There wasn't a lot involved with that. I've been in charge of the storm sewers, which was a definite learning experience, and I've been in charge of the police. In fact, still am. Police and fire.
Wow.
So every once in a while, it's odd to realize that people have trusted me like this. it's great to be able to serve. I grew up here in Timberlake, so it's great to be able to serve the community I grew up in, and do what I can to help out and make sure that I wanted to be the place. As great a place as was when I grew up, it's not better. So.
Mm-hmm.
As part of your campaign, did you tell them that that by writing the Crusader, you stood for truth and justice?
No, but there was one point where the daughter of a former mayor asked all the candidates if we'd be willing to accept it, and oddly, it was before this recent political spate. You know, when people call at 2 a.m, you know, will you be there to take the call? I said, I'm usually up working till 2 a.m, so that's really not a problem.
So, do you, you must keep somewhat aware of what's going on in comics today and everything, with your mentions of crises and civil wars and stuff like that. As an independent comic book creator, do you have any... thoughts on the state of comics today? Right now, comics are about $3.50 for a 22-page comic that's chock full of ads. Yours are a little bit more expensive, but there are no ads except in the Free Comic Book Day ones, other than your own house ads. And do you have any thoughts on where comics are today and what could be done to improve it? Do you have a manifesto?
I wouldn't go so far as to call it a manifesto. I think comics are a wonderful patchwork quilt of stuff, and as of late, they've gotten a little too one-note, and obviously I'm talking generalities, not specifics, but they're certainly both that I eat up. There needs to be a place for Mark Waid's Brave and the Bold in the comic book universe, and it seemed like, there was some resistance to that. I think there should be fun books along with serious books, and I think I'd like to see them get away from as much continuity stuff as they're doing. When I was a kid, there'd be a three-part Justice League story and a two-part Superman story, and at 7 years old, I could figure out which story took place first. Just because I bought one week and one the next, I'd go, hey, how did Superman make it out of the Manhunter's secret lair so they could go be the Daily Planet? But I think they worry too much about that. I'd like to see him get away from the big events a little too much, or a little more. Far too many big events that just feed into yet another big event where I have to buy more books. Crisis was special when it happened. It hadn't happened before, and you can actually just read Crisis, or you can read Crisis and whatever books you were reading, and you didn't have to read everything else.
Sure.
I think the more subtle crossovers work better. I started reading Green Lantern because he appeared in The Flash, and I said, oh, he's kind of cool. Justice League was a great book to get you into other comics in the DC universe at the time, too. I don't think everything's got to be bleak. I would like to see... I love the Marvel Adventures line. I love the DC Animated line. But I'd like to see them take at least one of their flagship titles and just... Ecumenical is the word I read, which is far better than I think it should be like Star Wars. When you're a kid, you watch Star Wars 7 and you think it's a great film, and you watch it at 27 and you go, wow, there's depth to this film. And I'm not saying it's easy to write, but I would like to see more people try to write something that doesn't talk down to kids, but is suitable for all ages, because that's the book that gets you to see the rest of the DC universe.
Yeah.
And then when you're ready, you can read, dark Batman stories all you want, but, I think when you section things off into the animated series universe, you keep them away from everything else rather than bring them into it.
Yeah.
For sure.
More variety. Not every book needs to be part of a 7-part crisis that will forever change the character's life and somebody will die.
Yeah, Marty and I actually have a nephew, and we've had mixed feelings about getting him hooked on comics because, finding appropriate material for him is one thing, but then getting him hooked on a really expensive habit that his parents would not thank us for, where you buy one and then you have to buy 40 more for it to make sense. It's tough to find things that a kid can just read standalone and enjoy.
Yeah, exactly. One of the reasons I picked the DC Comics Presents was that it was Superman and one character, and they were never really more than two-part stories. But they would introduce characters in those books. They would do those little, 8 or 60-page intros to characters, and they did one in DC Comics Presents for Teen Titans, which admittedly didn't work because I didn't start picking it up, but that was probably more a function of what my allowance was. But there's Justice League where they did All-Star Squadron and then started reading All-Star Squadron. There are more subtle ways to bring people into buying the rest of what's out there in comics than forcing them. If you force them to buy 40 issues or something to find out that everything you knew was wrong and everything's just going to reset in 0 hour or whatever it is, then that's completely different than showing them an entire universe and then hoping they start picking up and everything else that's out there.
That's a good point.
Well put. It's been...
My manifesto. they need to hire me for more things.
Well, we concur.
Thank you.
So you're certainly willing to keep taking jobs from the big boys, huh?
Oh, yeah. I love the part where I get checks. I know there's a whole Bendis Kirkman debate. And my feeling is, I don't think I should have to make a decision until I have to make the decision.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I like blondes and redheads. Until DC comes and offers me an exclusive contract, I don't need to make that decision. So there's no reason I can't do both.
Absolutely.
So have you used any comic book applications for the iPhone?
No, I haven't. I actually just got my iPhone about a month and a half ago. I'm still experimenting with it. But it's been addictive. I got it so that when I go to comic book conventions and I'm out of town, I can take care of emails and whatever crises erupt when I'm out of the office. Because being a one-man operation, everybody thinks that, oh, you can take off whenever you want. And actually, it means, no, your job is going to follow wherever you go because there's no one else to take care of it. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I do have, I think, the first 8 issues of Loving Cage loaded into it just in case I need to show anyone. It's a great portfolio of us.
Oh, nice.
What do you see yourself doing after Loving Capes?
I can't say what project, but there is a comic book company that is approaching me to write and draw a book for him, so hopefully that will pan out. Loving Capes, I see going another 2-3 years or so.
Great.
Especially at quarterly pace, and I'm putting them out. After that, I honestly don't have that much of a plan for it. I'm just gonna to quote the sports night, showing up and seeing what happens.
Well, yeah. We're hoping that it hits Hollywood. Yeah.
Yes, I would love that. I need to write a TV show or a movie at some point in my life. So.
Do you think that there's any circumstance under which it would speed up and become maybe a monthly or?
I can't imagine that. Only because I could probably do it monthly. I would be afraid that I would burn out.
Mm.
But the process has become so. Incestuous is the wrong word, but it's the only one I can think of, where I couldn't hand pencils off to anyone because of the process that I use now. There's no one else who could ink it but me. There's no one else who could color it but me. That's because the book has grown around the way that I work. So being a one-man operation, it's kind of hard to speed it up any more than that. I can do a page a day, but I have to have nothing else going on. So I have to be making a lot more money for Loving Capes to make that happen.
The sewers would just go to pot.
In your neighborhood.
Well, it's been almost an hour, so I imagine we should let you go.
Okay.
But thanks a lot for doing this interview and talking with us.
Is there anything you'd like to leave us with? Your trade is coming out soon, and the next issue...
My trade is coming out. It's available on Amazon.com, really? Loving Capes, the first trade, which is called Do You Want to Know a Secret, is coming out in November from IDW. I think it'll be out in the end of November. Collects first 6 issues.
Great for Christmas.
Issue 9 of Loving Capes will be out in January, and issue 10 will be available for Free Comic Book Day. There will be another complete issue.
Great. Are you going to be at any conventions? Can people come and see you any place coming up?
Wizard World Dallas, or Wizard World Texas, don't forget which exactly they call that. And then I'll be at New York, MegaCon in Florida, San Diego, hopefully Charlotte, Baltimore, and Mid-Ohio Con.
Oh, great.
And there's always the chance that I could show up at other shows, but those are the ones that I've got scheduled so far.
And where can people find you on the internet?
The easiest place to go, the easiest place to spell is loveandcapes.com, LoveAndCapes. And my main site for everything that I do that's cursing and comic books illustration and Loving Capes is Tomz.com, Thomz.com. The funny way that I spelled Tom is that my mom did with my last initial Z.com. So if you go to the Loving Capes site, it'll link you to the Tomz site. So.
Yeah,
and your blog is great to read. I have it on my daily feed now. So,
oh, great! Thank you.
I love the little spoilers. My appetite is whetted.
Oh yeah, I post a panel from each page as I finish it, just to show that the work is proceeding. I never post the punchline, and I try not to post anything that spoils anything. So, given that issue 8 is out, I'm kind of assuming that most people have read it. So I have already got hate mail over the one that I just posted yesterday.
I was wondering about that. You can't do that!
No, what are you doing? And then I push Abby off the building, it's great.
No large hulking women have shown up at your door yet, have they?
No, they haven't.
Oh, good,
No screaming fans, just a couple emails from people that I appreciate it. I think most of it is in jest, but, you know, it's like, you know what, I was doing okay for 7 issues. Let's assume that I'm going to throw 8 issues. Let's assume that I'm going to do okay on 9.
It just means you've arrived now.
Yes. I need fans, I need a legion of followers, and I need enemies. I want a rogues gallery. That way I know that I'm at the pinnacle of my career.
Well, you already have a police force at your disposal. That's going to help.
That's true. I have my own personal army. So. They asked me if I was going to do anything while I was mayor of Timberlake, and I said, no, the village of Timberlake will remain the same. I don't know what you're talking about.
Nice. Well, with that, we should probably let you go.
Okay.
Thanks again.
Yeah, it's been great talking to you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
All right. Good night, Tom.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye.
All right.
So that was our interview with Tom Zoller, the creator of Love and Capes. Issue 8 just came out last week, and I almost have it finished.
So do you know what the cliffhanger is going to be?
I don't know what the cliffhanger is going to be yet, because I still have a few pages left.
Well, so, enjoy reading up on Tom's work. I'm curious about Raiders now, so I'll have to check that out.
I know, I was thinking that too.
And that other trade he mentioned, the Hero Happy Hour.
Yeah, ooh. The one that you didn't think was going to be.
I have to admit, I didn't think that was real. I thought he was just a turn of phrase.
Well, you caught it quickly.
Now. I did. I piped down. Now he's going to listen to this and go, oh.
that idiot.
Yeah. Well, we wrapped up with Tom. Maybe we should
wrap up.
Yeah, probably. I was going to say, he's going to listen to this and say, oh my god, their quality is awful. So yeah, sorry about that, Tom.
I think that was an enjoyable experience. So
great,
we'll chalk it up to that at the very least.
Yeah, I think it went well.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.